Since the spring of 2020, there's never been a greater opportunity for growth in e-commerce. The world's shopping habits have universally changed, and the demand to buy online has never been greater. Of course, there's never been a more challenging time for any business than the last 2 years. From Brexit to the supply chain meltdown in 21, the ever-given shipping disaster and the legacy of the COVID-19 pandemic, and then more recently, inflation, the war in Ukraine, and the subsequent rise in oil prices. For online businesses everywhere, growth is high on the agenda, but it's a long way to the top if you want to be an e-commerceer. Hello and welcome back to a very special edition of the e-commerceer podcast brought to you by TradeBridge. I'm Gareth Martin. Today on the podcast, we're going to discuss opportunities for growth for online sellers. And we're very fortunate to be joined by special guests Neil Tunbridge and James Story Pugh from Pivot International, who drive global growth for both e-commerce merchants and marketplaces. Of course, the first question I had for James was, how did Pivot International help online sellers seize their opportunity to grow?
Pivot International is an agency that was founded just over 10 years ago, fundamentally to help UK online traders and e-commerce business understand what opportunities lay outside of the UK. Initially, we understood that the UK market was heavily and still is heavily dominated by Amazon and eBay as online marketplace channels. But we always felt that not only in the UK, there were a few kind of up-and-coming marketplaces and more today than the likes of Frugo and OnBuy, but actually outside the UK, across Europe, US and Australasia, there are some really solid marketplace plays that could be very solid revenue drivers for UK online businesses, but hadn't necessarily either looked at or understood these marketplaces or these regions. So we kind of sat back and felt, look, we could create a business that helped educate these merchants around these opportunities and then fundamentally help them onboard to these marketplaces and trade into these international regions.
So if for aspiring marketplaces, the keys to growth are more merchants in more territories, and the keys to growth for merchants was to proactively broaden and diversify the amount of marketplaces that they sell on, I wanted to find out what the key challenges were for e-commerceers broadening into new territories and on new marketplaces.
You know, our commercial model as a business is we work for the marketplaces and we're their UK, kind of UK office in inverted commas. So we really have a very strong relationship with the marketplace, understand what their strategy is. And then we come to the UK and we kind of knock on the virtual doors of these merchants and just explain why a given marketplace could be a good channel for them. So it's about saying to, you know, Mr. or Mrs. Merchant, you know, there's a marketplace in the US is looking for, you know, tech products. You know, have you looked at this as a channel to market? There's ways to do it from an integration perspective. We know the kind of cross-border logistics partners. We know how to price it in region. And the idea really is to help them understand that actually, if they're up and running on an Amazon, eBay, they can de-risk that channel by having these additional kind of routes to market. And the education is really, really more about, you know, kind of understanding that there are some very big players out there, multi-billion euro, a dollar, pound marketplaces in the world that are not Amazon. And some countries don't even have Amazon as a player, like, you know, Poland and the Netherlands, Australia. It's kind of growing and have made a presence there. But
just to add to that, what we end up being in a sense is kind of quasi consultative for these merchants and retailers or brands, whatever you want to call them. As James said, our clients are the marketplaces, so we act as an extension of their business development teams. But very often, by kind of linking together a lot of small solutions, we are able to then go to these merchants and say, you know, hey, are you aware that there's a great opportunity for, you know, sports retailers into Latin America, for instance? This is the platform you can sell on. This is how you ship your goods. This is what you do need to do from a fulfillment perspective or from a tax perspective. And really kind of, more often than not, these merchants aren't aware that there's a channel open to them. And even if they are aware that there's a channel open to them, they don't necessarily know how to kind of bring all those dots together.
British product, or British kind of manufactured products, have a very strong cachet internationally. And I think in the UK, we maybe undersell ourselves a little bit, but, you know, putting, and I'm not saying whacking a Union Jack on it on every product that goes over there, but, you know, talking about the background to a product, the manufacturing, the branding, really holds strong in certain regions globally. US, kind of Australia, you know, were desperate for UK brands, and they did phenomenally well before COVID kicked in, and actually getting product to Australia has become, you know, a nightmare for over the last 2 years, or price competitive, put it that way. But that'll kick back in, like New Zealand. But it, you know, even China, the right brand, we've done a huge amount of work with China over the last 5 years, just for UK brands and products coming into the region, selling on the key marketplaces in China. And we have a JV partner, Hong Kong, who supports us on this. But actually, when you know the right products, the right price point, you really tap into that phenomenal audience who have a real desire to partake in Western brands and support the growth of those products. So that, you know, we've always seen, you know, China had a bit of its heyday back in kind of 2014, 2015, when there was this big push, but actually it's a very cost-effective way of doing it to support the brands into that region. So that we always kind of tell brands and explain to them about these opportunities that are kind of over in those regions. So, and they're still open to any brand from a UK perspective. Ironically, our best sellers are not who you'd imagine. Like I mentioned, we've spoken to a lot of the high street top brands, and the bigger players, you know, 10 mil plus, just don't have the ability to be flexible and sell to multiple markets. And it's been a real challenge. The ones for us who are the key to the kind of half a mil, 1 mil to 10 mil GMV merchants who understand they need to continue to drive and grow the business, have the flexibility, but really it's about having the mindset as well. And I think that's something we've always kind of bumped our heads up against, is that merchants often feel that listing products on a marketplace, they can sit back, have a cup of tea, and sales will come flooding in. And it's just not true. You know, they need to, they're a channel, but they need to be driven. And to Neil's point, you've got to invest in and or leverage marketing opportunities, merchandising opportunities, you know, pricing strategies, what SKUs, you know, bundles, all these kind of traditional kind of levers need to be pulled. And that's a job. So the bigger merchants have, often depends on the job title, where it's like a channel manager or marketplace manager or someone who sits in there and actually trades these marketplaces as a channel to market. And just don't leave them sitting there. And what we found is that the kind of slightly more medium-sized businesses are much better at that. They hit Amazon day one, knowing that's a channel for them. They add that to their own eco operations. They've often chopped out the high street, and they're just more kind of online, kind of digitally focused and digitally savvy. I'm not saying that all big high street brands lack the digital knowledge. They just don't necessarily have that flexibility. And also, it's kind of worth noting that there's been, and there was, and there still is, quite a bit of kind of anti. I know what the word is, but you know, certain brands don't want to see themselves as a marketplace seller. They're not an Amazon seller. They want to protect their brand image, and therefore they've, you know, for a long time they took a step back from selling on marketplaces, to their own detriment. Where now you can see that. So, you know, these brands have kind of taken on Amazon as a channel for them and a revenue stream for them. So, you know, that kind of negative cachet is gone, and brands realize they have to kind of build in marketplaces as part of an omni-channel strategy to kind of grow, or grow digitally at least. But it's a tough one. You know, brands just feel like they'd love to own the customer for their own DTC operations, but it's just not. It's not as simple as that. Customers use Amazon as a search engine. And therefore, if you're not present on Amazon, you're kind of missing out on the opportunity to convert or at least drive brand awareness from that as a channel.
So education, understanding, and agility are the keys to success. One of the six burning issues for e-commerce in 2022 identified by TradeBridge was the notion of changing international borders. Of course, the UK is in the process of making a raft of international trade deals in 2022. The question I had for Pivot International was just what is the future of international e-commerce for British e-commerceers and how can they help?
Australasia has been hit massively. We had a couple of clients over there, one called Catch in Australia, a big kind of multi-brand kind of fashion marketplace, and then one called Trade Me in New Zealand, and they've both struggled to get product from, or we just can't get product, we can't cost effectively get product over there. So in terms of a regional opportunity for us, that's kind of definitely taken a side seat, and I think it will come back, but it's still not back where it was kind of back in 2019 and before. We found that the euro has been a much more interesting proposition for UK merchants. That's definitely been a trend we've seen. Continental Europe and people have started to look a lot more at the big European marketplaces. The Cdiscounts, the Price Ministers, the Bowls, the Allegros. In contact, even with Brexit, the complexities to getting product into Europe is a lot simpler, a lot more cost effective than trying to ship it halfway around the world. The US, ironically, hasn't been massively affected. Most of the marketplaces we work with in the US have their own fulfillment solution and warehouse solution. So merchants can, ship products by ship, and therefore there's no rush to get the product over there. So when it's in the warehouse, it sits there, it can be fulfilled. And a lot of the work we do in the US is probably, in the US, is more around technology. So there's no shelf life on the product and there's no kind of trend as such for those products, so that's been relatively simpler. But we've also seen in the last couple of years the growth of certain UK marketplaces, the Frugo and the Onbuys, who are pretty unknown, and they might berate me for saying this kind of 3 or 4 years ago, have become really dominant players in the UK market because it's giving me more channels in the UK, less complexity for merchants. They can add to their portfolio of marketplaces, and it's just been a really kind of great success story from a UK perspective. And a lot of merchants potentially have said that we'll look at UK, develop UK, and then we'll get back in the kind of international mix when things have settled down.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the knock-on effects of COVID on those markets that James mentioned earlier on, so Australia, New Zealand, and the kind of wider Southeast Asian markets, there just wasn't any long-haul flights. And so for UK merchants doing dropship into those regions just became extortionately expensive, and so the merchants were turning off, and actually the marketplace just turned around and said, look, it's not worth our while even trying to get these sellers on, because if the customers want the products, then the merchants aren't going to be able to ship. And if the price of oil keeps going northwards of whatever it is at the moment, $140 a barrel, then we may have short-term impact on getting products on planes in the near term, until things potentially calm down across Europe. So these things obviously you can't plan for and you don't really envisage as part of your kind of trading year. But, there's always problems that come up like that you can't necessarily plan for or envisage.
So if the routes to market in Europe and America are still relatively clear for the e-commerceer, I wanted to ask the team from Pivot International their top tips for success in 2022.
As James mentioned earlier, 2014-15, there seemed to be a kind of, the Asian markets were kind of hot to trot. But there's a lot of complexity into going into the Asian markets, particularly the likes of China and what have you, where there's all sorts of different barriers to overcome. And so secondly, there was also sort of post that was a strong desire to get into Europe. Getting into Europe's particularly difficult around payments, translation, shipping. Brexit screwed that up completely as well. So I would say the US market is one that's typically overlooked. Similar shopping habits, same language. Similar platforms that consumers shop on, pretty easy to get into. Any merchant that's doing FBA can put product over in FBA in America as well, and also trade omni-channel across multiple other platforms that allow Amazon fulfillment. So that's kind of one from me. I'll hand over to James, see if he's got any. But I would say, as a rule, don't overlook the US as an opportunity.
Yeah, I'd probably say don't put your head in the sand. That I feel like there's this kind of fear factor since early 2020 around COVID. And I think the short-term strategy of basically burying your head and trying to do no work over the last 2 years is not the right way forward. I think there's some really strong, accessible markets. UK, we've mentioned, and the marketplace in the UK, which can
can definitely be leveraged. There's some very good European players that can cost effectively be approached. You know, the Allegros of the world and the C Discounts of the world, a big marketplace, they can cost effectively be managed. There are a whole host of European warehouse solutions that are kind of plugged into those marketplaces. So it's a very kind of quick and easy win. But I feel like maybe outside of Europe, it's become slightly more complex. But to Neil's point, you know, Asia is still a phenomenal opportunity, and we have clients in Hong Kong and China who are doing incredible business. And that's probably because, again, lack of products coming in or lack of competition. So if you can get and take the time to work out a wider strategy, there's still opportunities globally to be leveraged. So I feel like the world's is never going to be completely stable with COVID and now the situation in Russia, Ukraine. But you can't let that affect your day-to-day business and your strategy.
I would say that always look beyond Amazon and eBay. You know, they are incumbently incredibly successful, but they are also quite restrictive. Amazon in particular is very, very good at helping merchants get blocked or get turned off for numerous different reasons. And although we would always encourage a merchant to sell on there, we would always then encourage that same merchant to de-risk that platform by trading on others. So it's not all about those two behemoths, as our kind of business attests to.
One more. Educate yourself about the channels. There's a lot of information out there. You can just kind of Google European marketplace solutions. You can get like 15 or 20 options out there. Have a little goosey gander, you know, read through what they're looking for, you know, and definitely, you know, you can find out opportunities, you know, and be a bit proactive, you know, get on the old LinkedIn and just kind of get in hold of a kind of account manager or category manager or give us a call and we can assist. Little sales pitch there. But it's just there are lots of opportunities out there, and maybe the final point is just realize that it's a additional channel to the business, and a channel needs kind of TLC. You know, it can't just be set up and let to run. And actually, there's some really great resources out there, you know, cost-effective individuals. You can hire channel managers who have that experience of trading on Amazon. And if you can trade on Amazon, you can pretty much trade in a lot of these marketplaces. So, you know, if you really want to do it properly, go and hire a resource to support you.
What I would add to that, though, is that this isn't expensive. And so a lot of people think about opening up new markets and new territories being, you know, let's do one every 18 months because it's going to be extortionately expensive. These are not high OPEX channels to turn on. And if you have that expertise in-house, they can often run four or five of these channels, you know, per person. And it's CAPEX free. You know, there's no money involved in terms of turning these channels on.
If you'd like to learn more about growing your e-commerce business, visit www.tradebridge.com. You can download the E-Commerce Ear podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. With our special thanks to the team at Tradebridge and the team at Pivot International, I'm Gareth Martin. Thank you for listening.